So welcome, everyone. My name is Glenn Pearson. I'm the Service Authority's manager for this project that we'll be talking about tonight. And I'm also the Deputy Director for Operations and Maintenance for the Service Authority. I want to welcome everyone to this third public meeting for the Service Authority's Bull Run Mountain and Evergreen Water Supply Improvement Project. Before we get started tonight, I just wanted to remind everyone that we are happy to take any questions and any feedback that you may have. That's all extremely important to us. Since we're conducting this briefing virtually, we'll keep everyone's mic muted and we'll take questions through the chat window. For those who might need a little direction on that, you can find the chat window or the box to pull it up. If you're on a computer near the bottom center of your screen, if you just click on that button, the chat window will open up and you'll see a little box in there where you can type in any question that you might have or any observations or comments that you might want to make. Since we're taking questions through the course of the presentation, but not addressing them till the end, if you'll put a little bit of context on your question or your statement, maybe, you know, in the middle of the presentation, I saw this, or on slide 9, you said that, and then that'll give us some context to help us go back and answer your question as quickly as we can. Also, before we get started tonight, I just want to advise everyone that there are some folks that we also have on the line. Our vice chair for on the Service Authority's board, Mr. Paul Colangelo, is with us tonight. He is also Supervisor Canlon's appointee to our board. As most of you probably know, Mr. Canlon represents the Gainesville District, which contains the Bull Run Mountain and Evergreen area. Also with us tonight, we have with the Service Authority, Mr. Don Panel, who is the Deputy General Manager for the Service Authority. Also represented here tonight are folks who represent the consulting firms that have been assisting us through the duration of this project. We have Messrs. Kevin Wood and Rich Kinchelo, both of whom are with Dewberry Engineers, Mr. Peter Foster, who is a hydrogeologist with Emory and Garrett Groundwater Investigations, and Mr. Kevin Dugan, who is with ERM and Associates. So just wanted to brief everyone a little bit on what the Service Authority is all about. You can see here a slide, our mission, the Prince William County Service Authority. We're dedicated to excellence in providing safe, reliable water service to our customers and returning clean water to the environment. Our vision is to be a nationally acclaimed leader in providing clean water and excellent customer service through sustainable, innovative business practices, community partnerships, and environmental stewardship. Just some quick by the numbers, the Service Authority is about $1.6 billion in above and below ground assets. We serve a little over 96,000 accounts, representing about 370,000 people in Prince William County. So to come right to the point, this project, it serves some basic needs. Underlying those needs, some of the Service Authority's wells in the Evergreen, Bull Run Mountain Evergreen area are more than four decades old. We are experiencing some diminishing yields, that is the amount of water that we can produce from some of those wells, primarily due to age and wear and tear. For any of you who may have your own private wells, you probably can understand that. But the SA is committed to maintaining the level of service and water quality our customers have come to expect. Since this system was first acquired by the Service Authority in 1990, that was 32 years ago. And to maintain that level of service, one of the primary objectives of this project is to provide a reserve well capacity. So I'll say that again, to provide a reserve well capacity. And so some of you may scratch your head and wonder, what the heck is that? What does reserve well capacity mean? Well, it means that this is a well, once it comes online, that will allow the service authority to continue to provide water service to its customers during times of emergency. Emergencies might be things like water main repairs, or when other parts of our groundwater supply system need to be taken out of service for repairs or replacement. But it also means that this well supply can be used intermittently in a rotation with other wells that the service authority operates in the area. We have multiple wells connected by the distribution piping. This well will just put one more well in the rotation of wells that have to operate to meet total demand in the region. So what are some of the impacts that we foresee out of this project? Well, a very positive impact is that, in fact, we'll be able to maintain that level of service I talked about. And that has to do directly with not just water quality, but the reliability of our system, as well as the redundancy that's built into our system. And so to put a little more definition on that, when we talk about maintaining level of service, what we mean is that the amount of water that's supplied is based on demand in the region. It's not based on the number or the size of wells. This well will operate when it needs to, and it won't operate when it doesn't need to. So if you imagine this well system operating together, multiple wells, multiple pipes, unless a new customer happens to connect the day after this project starts, the amount of water that will be in demand and therefore that we will supply on the day before this well is started up will be the same amount of water that will be provided on the day after this well is started up. This project has been specifically designed to avoid or greatly mitigate impacts on other private wells. We had access to, and if you go to our website, you will see maps showing other private wells that we knew were in the area. These are wells that are on file with the state. And so we could zero in on those and take every precaution to ensure that this well, when it does operate, will avoid or greatly mitigate any impacts to those other private wells. As it stands right now, the service authority is working with landowners in the area to secure access and permanent easements and above ground infrastructure as we construct it. Just want to assure everyone that the above ground structures will be low key, and the architecture that we'll be using to construct those, like the small well house, will be in keeping with the local view, the local architecture. So some things that this project will not impact, right? This project will not impact the service authority's current service area. There's no change in the area that the service authority is obligated to provide water to customers. It will not impact our customers' current water rates. This project will not impact the county's Rural Crescent designation or any designated land uses as part of the county comp plan. The project will not impact our existing water distribution system, either in up on the mountain or down on Evergreen. And finally, this project will not impact any obligation you do or don't already have to become a service authority customer. That is, this project is independent for any person, for any household. If you have a private well, there's no obligation to connect that well or give that well up. If you have a private well, you are not obligated to connect. It is strictly intended to maintain level of service for anybody in the service area, in our service area, who uses our water. So just a quick overview of the project timeline. The items in gray obviously have already occurred, but this project goes all the way back to the early part of May when we conducted some above ground geophysical surveys and other preliminary engineering work. Through 2019, we did develop some test wells and conducted some pumping of those wells and some water quality analysis of the water. Later on in 2019, towards the end, we did convert some of those test wells into production wells, which is to say the test wells are slightly smaller bores. Production wells are larger bores and involves more equipment and infrastructure in order to bring it up to a production capacity. Over the last couple of years then, we've been in the process of designing and permitting the infrastructure, which includes the well houses and the piped connections to connect our well to our existing distribution system. Looking forward, our next step in this project will be to conduct a public facility review with the County Planning Commission. After that's completed, and assuming it comes out favorably, we have no doubt that it will, we will move to begin construction of the infrastructure, which includes the wellhouse and the piping systems. And in 2023, we anticipate starting up the system, going through some checkouts and bringing it up to full operation. I mentioned easements earlier, just wanted to go over some different kinds of easements. Some of these easements are temporary, some of them are permanent. When I use the term temporary, that just means that the easement typically expires once all the construction is done. Those kinds of easements are usually laid down to provide temporary vehicle access to a work site, or sometimes to create storage and lay down areas for things like pipe and other equipment. The permanent easement, permanent easement remains in place after the project is constructed, and again is used to provide access for our service vehicles and that sort of thing. It's also used to provide, again, access for operating and maintaining any buried or above ground infrastructure that may come from the construction. In this case, obviously water mains, wellheads, and other above ground structures. I did mention production wells. For this project, we have two of them. One well will be developed, fully developed for this project and plumbed to our existing distribution system. That well will have a maximum safe yield, or I should say was determined to have a maximum safe yield of about 60 gallons a minute. And that well is at a depth of about 330 feet down below existing grade. The second well will be capped and closed unless and until that well's capacity is needed. It has a much lower maximum safe yield of about 10 gallons a minute and is drilled to a depth of about 220 feet. All the remaining wells, the test wells that I mentioned earlier, the ones that we drilled back in 2019, all of those wells were capped and they were closed to prevent, for a couple of reasons, but the most important one is to prevent potential contamination of underlying aquifers from the surface. So here's a map of all of the wells and the test wells and the monitoring wells that we've used through the course of this project. You can see here that we have the two wells highlighted in these sort of yellowish greenish stars. The one further to the north, well, just to orient you real quick, this is to the west side of this map. You can see Mountain Road, Hunting Lane on the north end here. This is Mill Creek and Berkeley Drive on the south, and then Highway 15 is way off the page here to the right. But the well we intend to develop, the 60 gallon a minute well, you can see here is located plop in the middle of Evergreen Country Club. That little white structure you can see there, if you can just make it out, is the area where the golf course washes down its golf carts. The second well, the smaller one that we will close and cap, is up here just north of the intersection of Mountain Road and Hunt Lane. You can also see on here six different locations, two sort of in the top left and then three, four here in the Evergreen Country Club area. These are all locations where we monitored water drawdown and water quality at these monitoring locations while we were doing the pump testing for these production wells. So since I'm talking about the production wells themselves, let me talk a little bit about the testing that we did. We conducted a 3-day pump test. Both of those, if I flip back here, both of these wells were tested over a continuous 3-day period. And the intent there was to put the aquifers under the maximum stress that they would likely see ever if the wells were developed and the biggest pump you could possibly put down in these wells was turned on. It was designed to stress the aquifer. The water levels at these surrounding monitoring locations, we started monitoring these locations beginning 3 days before the pump test started. We monitored continuously through the 3-day pump tests, and then we monitored continuously for another 6 days after those tests were completed. So the important result, the one that I want to get across here during this conversation, is that the water levels and water quality at all of the monitoring locations, that is at all of these points, the water quality and the drawdown were not impacted by our pump tests. The one well that was impacted, as you can imagine, was the smaller well that the golf course uses today to wash down their carts. It's a non-potable well. It's not treated water. It's not for drinking. And we've had conversations with the golf course as to how to resolve that issue, but none of the other monitoring locations saw any kind of impact due to the pump tests. This here is just a blow up of the well head that we intend to develop. You can see here, we've got a property or an easement on the golf course that will contain is sort of a 3D view of the well housing that we intend to build with a little temporary storage for water distribution. But you can see how the property lays out here, that will be fenced and we'll have some asphalt paving inside the fenced area. I hasten to add that this area is very much out of sight, out of mind. It's from the south. You can't see it because you're looking through the golf course's main buildings. And from the west, it's behind all of the trees that line the creek that run down the east side of the golf club's 18th fairway. This is the, let me jump back here. So I've just shown you what we intend to develop here at the production well that's going to go into use, the one that we're going to cap and close. This is just a blow up of that area. You can see here the well head that will be capped. We're just going to put a security fence around that and do a little clearing and grading. That's the end of my presentation, and we are prepared to take any questions you might have. I'm going to turn this over to Michelle, who is also at the Service Authority. She'll read out questions as they've come to us, and we will do our best to answer them for you. Michelle, take it away.
Sure thing. So I believe all of our contractors and people involved in the project should be able to unmute themselves. But if you want to answer a question and you are unable to, just send me a message and I'll make sure that you can do so. So we have a couple questions that I believe were addressed during the presentation, but I will ask them just to make sure everybody heard the answers. Our first question from Karen: will the PowerPoint presentation be posted to your website or sent out to participants?
Good question, Karen. The answer to that is yes. In fact, this presentation was posted a couple of hours before to our website, a couple of hours before the presentation started this evening. And you can see the project's website right there on the closing page.
All right. And then another question was, I was told that the SA was going to put in a water tower on the mountain to address the water capacity issue for Bull Run Mountain users. Why is the water tower not being discussed?
I'm unaware of a water tower. I know that the service authority already has three different water towers on the mountain at different levels. I think two are at the top elevation, what we call the upper Bull Run, and then one is in lower Bull Run. I'm not aware of any other water towers. I've got Mr. Panel on the line here. Don, are you aware of any other discussions about other infrastructure like water towers for Bull Run at this point?
No, there's no plan for any additional water tower.
Okay, very good.
All right. And then we have a question from BP. And I believe this refers to adding the new wells. It says age and wear and tear. Why not just replace the existing infrastructure?
That's a really good question. And it's not as easy as it seems. We did investigate as part of this project early on. And in fact, we have done some repair and replacement of our existing wells. It's just that the concern about redundancy to the entire system still remains. And so we felt like for this project, we needed to go ahead and find an additional location for an additional well. I hope that answers your question, BP.
All right, and then we have a couple questions from Bill, and I can kind of combine some of them. So in 2019, I asked but never got an answer if the service authority damages and drains our private home wells, are there bonds set up to pay our personal costs and damages?
So as I've covered during the presentation, we have taken all of the prudent steps that we know to take to ensure that the kinds of damages that are being described here won't occur. That includes damages to other people's personal property. That includes damages to people's private wells. There is no funding mechanism that we've set up as part of this project of the type that's being asked about here.
All right. And then also from Bill, where are the two wells being drilled and have they already been drilled? And another question from Karen was, how deep are those wells? And will we be adding a map of the well locations to the webpage?
All good questions. If you can still see the screen, I'll just go back to the map of the production wells. And again, the two yellow stars, sort of yellowish greenish stars that are being shown on the map at this time, those are the locations of the production wells. The answer is yes, both of those wells have already been drilled. One will be capped and the other will be fully developed into a production well. And I think the follow-on question had to do with, will this map be on the website? The answer to that is yes, along with the rest of the slides that comprise this presentation.
All right, great. We have got a couple questions that I believe might also be answered on that same slide you were just on, Glenn. Why did we choose those two locations and where will the water from the new well go?
So we chose these two locations for a couple of different reasons. One, obviously, they were locations where we felt like in working with our hydrogeologist, these were some of the better producing wells of the areas that we studied and tested. And as far as where the water will go, we have an existing, it's not reflected on this map, but we do have an existing distribution network. The service authority has an existing distribution network on the Bull Run Mountain and in the Evergreen area. And that will be the limit of this water's end uses. Again, like I mentioned during the presentation, one of the things that this project will not impact is the service authority's existing service area. It will not impact the locations of customers, if you will, or potential locations of customers. So all the water produced in Evergreen and Bull Run from this well will be used to serve customers on the mountain and in Evergreen, and that is all. I hope that answers the question.
Our next question from KD is, in the event that damage occurs to our private wells, what would the proper course of action be for homeowners to take?
I think I will turn that question over to our Deputy General Manager, Mr. Pannell. Mr. Pannell, you want to take a shot at that?
Sure. So anytime we have a situation where a customer's property is damaged, and that could be because one of our service vehicles is involved in some property damage, or a water main break causes some flooding into on a customer's property. Any of those situations are handled by what's called VRSA. They're an insurer that sends an investigator to investigate the situation and work through any compensation or mitigation that's needed. So in the same way that we would handle any of those kinds of business impacts that might happen, the hypothetical that's proposed would be investigated and handled in the same way.
All right, and we had two similar questions about the wells and the aquifers. When was the last mapping of the underground aquifers?
So the last mapping, I believe, was in 2019. Peter, I think we've got you on the line. The last mapping I'm aware of on the mountain that we did, you provided through EGGI. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, hi, Glenn. Thanks. As part of the initial investigations, we conducted detailed bedrock geologic mapping, which the aquifers here at the Bull Run site are bedrock, fractured bedrock in nature. So we're looking for fracture trace analyses, different types of geologic features. And those efforts were conducted as part of the initial efforts in the investigation. And that was around 2019. That's about just about right, Glenn.
Great. And you said there was a similar question, Michelle?
Yes, we have a couple about the aquifers. Has there been a change in the last 20 years that we're aware of, I guess?
So I'm going to assume the question means a change in the aquifers?
I believe so, yes.
No significant changes that I'm aware of, although I think many of us on this call will probably remember the earthquake that happened. I want to say it was back in 2011. I'm not certain if that had significant impacts on the aquifer in this area, but I do know that it had some impacts on other wells and production wells and private wells in neighboring Fauquier County. That's about the best information I have on 20 years of changes.
We have two more aquifer questions. Where can the 2019 mapping of the aquifers be accessed? And can we share any details about the size and shape of the aquifer?
Absolutely. That information has been shared already on our website. Our consultant, EGGNI, teamed with, or Dewberry teamed with EGGNI, prepared some preliminary, or I should say some mapping of the aquifers or the underlying structures that was part of a report that is published on the same website. Again, let me just scroll to the end here. I'm sorry for making this so blinky, but here's the website. You can find that information. All of this information is contained as separate PDFs. If you go to the web page and sort of look to the right at the bottom, scroll down, you'll see a whole bunch of different publications, other types of information that we've produced for this project in the past. And that will include information on the aquifer itself. Did I answer that about right, Peter? You guys offered that for the most part.
Yeah, I think just one point of distinction, Glenn, is that we're mapping bedrock formations here, which I think folks are asking about the size and shapes of aquifers, and that's a little more characteristic of sand and gravel, which is which you would find on the eastern shore of Prince William County. Here is fractured rock. So as geologists, where our charge is to map what's on the surface, the type of bedrock, the, like you mentioned, the structural features, faults, folds, things of that nature that are the features that control how groundwater flows and moves in the underlying subsurface. So what you'll see on those maps is, you know, it's not an aquifer per se, but it's a bedrock geology map, which is what controls groundwater flow in this region.
Sure.
And I'm not sure if this is exactly what you said. Forgive me, I'm not brushed up on my geology, Peter. But is the fractured rock in this area a crystalline rock? And what is the capacity of the rock?
Yeah, so that's actually a really excellent question. So as a geologist, this is a really interesting area. So you sit on Bull Run Mountain, which kind of along mountain road there, the base of the mountain is what's called the Bull Run Mountain Fault. And that fault defines a major geologic change where to the east of that is are primarily sedimentary rocks, sandstones and siltstones, et cetera, conglomerates. And to the west of that fault are crystalline rocks that you mentioned here, in this case, meta sandstones, meta siltstones. And those are the different rock units that create the bedrock fractured aquifers that everybody out here, homeowners in the SA, rely upon for water resources. Hope that answered the question.
All right, we have a couple more questions about the wells. How many pump tests were conducted and the general dates on those, and why were the effects only monitored for 6 days, and was there any significant differences in rainfall during these times?
Peter, that sounds like another one for you, my friend.
Sure, Glenn, let me try and flip to my table here so I can quote the dates properly. But it was essentially in early 2020, just as this pandemic started, we ran the pumping tests and the pumping tests were run for 3 days consecutively on each of the wells. The monitoring is what we refer to as the pre-pumping period, which is customarily we'd like to monitor for it at a minimum, you know, this for the same length of time as the pumping period is going to be. So in this case, we monitored for 3 days prior to pumping to see what's happening in the aquifer. We want to see, are the water levels changing because of neighboring wells pumping? Are they changing because of a rainfall event or whatever might cause that water level change or no changes? And then we have the 3 days of pumping. And then the post-pumping period, in this case, we monitored for a minimum of 6 days, which is twice the pumping time period. And the reason for that is just to see, again, how's the water level recovery look? And then, you know, any monitoring for any impacts, vice versa, from our wells on neighboring wells or the neighboring wells on our wells. So that period in totality was 12 days of monitoring at a minimum, but actually there's even more monitoring than that went on. That's the base period.
Do you have the specific days for those tests, Peter? We have a question about the days and the rainfall.
Give me one moment. Yes, those pumping tests were conducted during March 23rd of 2020 to March 26th of 2020. Those were the exact dates. So and just for, and, about 2 years ago.
Yeah, and for records on rainfall, we would have to go back. I would imagine that we would have elected to do this kind of work on days where at least it wasn't raining on those days if we had our choice, right?
Certainly we... Sorry, I was muted there. Certainly, Glenn, as you mentioned, we prefer to do it when it's not raining. As with any kind of field work and things outside, we're mercy to the elements. I don't think there was any record of it being an exceptionally wet period during that time frame. Certainly, there was some precipitation, and that was monitored and considered in all of the results and analysis that was conducted.
And just for clarification, it seems like there's a little bit of confusion. There were multiple tests run, correct, over a period over the 3 days that you just noted?
One pumping test on each well, but two wells, so two pumping tests. The pumping tests go non 24 hours a day. They start, say, at 9 a.m. on a Tuesday, and they run nonstop till Friday morning, whatever the specific days were. So 3 days consecutively, 24 hours a day for 72 hours nonstop for each well.
All right, our next question, I believe this refers to the pumping test. It says, why didn't anyone contact the owners of the adjacent properties?
I'm not sure I understand the question. The service authority did reach out prior to pump tests. We sent notices, letters indicating what our intent was. And we actually held a public meeting before any of the tests occurred. We knew approximately where the test areas would be. And that was presented during the first public meeting. I should also mention that for the pump tests that we did conduct, again, as I mentioned during the presentation, we tried to be very sensitive to the locations of other nearby wells. And we did make an attempt to contact people that we could ascertain either were not a service authority customer or who we knew had a potential active private well based on the information that was on file with the state. So I guess the answer to the question is we did make an attempt to contact people with wells so that principally we could approach them about potentially monitoring their well or using their well as a monitoring location as we did our pump tests. And of course, the pump test that we did on the various locations on the golf course proper, we did advise the folks at the golf course were involved in that.
All right, we have a question about the golf cart wash area. So to protect the wellhead from contamination, will ECC be moving the golf cart wash area?
That's a question for the country club. I can't answer that. Having spoken with them, however, about this project, my best guess, and again, this is a question for the golf course, but I do not think their intent is to relocate the golf course. We are, however, very comfortable that both the well head and the well house that we will be constructing will be well protected from by design from any outside potential contamination.
One question we have, when were the other two meetings regarding this project? This person says January 28th, 2022 is the first letter they remember receiving.
So we had the presentations from the other two public meetings, again, are on the website that you can see on the page here. I forget the exact dates, but one was in April, I believe it was in April of 2019, and the second meeting was in August of 2019.
Okay, and if they're unable to find the research they're looking for on our website, should they reach back out to us to get what they want? And will the recording of this meeting be accessible on the website?
I would say if you have any questions about this project, you can see on the screen in front of you, or if you happen to be dialed in by phone, the email address to send your questions to is brmewater@pwcsa.org. We'll be happy to take any of those questions, and we typically respond very promptly. We monitor that that email site fairly closely and fairly regularly. And I apologize. What was the will a recording of this be posted?
Yes, will the recording of the meeting be posted on the website as well?
Sure, absolutely.
All right, and we have a couple questions I'm going to combine into one. So if there's something that I miss in your question, please just type it again in the chat box for me. How many wells do you estimate can be added without impacting the current well owners? And has the sustainability of this plan been researched?
I'll answer the second part first. The sustainability of this project is sustainability of the water delivery system was the entire driver behind this project in the first place. So it sustainability of water supply on the mountain was at the heart of this project. So I'd say the answer to that part of the question conclusively is yes. The sustainability of the project has been essentially hardwired into the objectives of the project. The first part of the question, I think, had to do with how many wells could be drilled before you start to impact. That's a really, really hard question to answer. And I'll defer to my good friend, Mr. Foster, but I would just say in general that it really has less to do with the number of wells. It has probably more to do with the location and the size, that is the capacity of the wells. And so both of those considerations, as well as several others, were all taken into account when we selected the locations for the production wells for this project. Peter, is there anything you would add to that?
No, Glenn, I think that's an excellent summary. The key is, it's not so much how many wells, but what are the withdrawals and where are they in proximity to each other and relative to the available recharge and groundwater availability in the area. So there's a lot of factors to consider in it. And as you said, that was the whole intent of this study for the wells that the Service Authority has installed.
Yeah, and again, I would just remind everyone on the call that just because a well is drilled for our system does not mean that there's an increase in withdrawal from the aquifer that underlies it. All it means is that we have additional redundancy. You'll recall during the presentation, I mentioned that just because we drill a well, that just adds to our ability to supply water. At the end of the day, the amount of water we supply is driven by the demand that is generated. So if we were fortunate enough to be able to provide all the water that, that would be in demand from our customers on Bull Run and in Evergreen from a single well, we would probably have two wells for the entire system. One well that's working all the time and another well that we can rotate in when the first well is out of service for any reason. We're not quite that lucky, but that's, I think that's a fair way to state it.
All right, we have had a number of questions in regards to the private well owners versus our service authority customers in terms of how issues, if there is any damage or problems with the wells, would be handled for the private wells versus the public or commercial service authority systems.
Don, I think you kind of touched on that answer before. You want to reprise your response to the previous question because it sounds similar to the one you covered earlier.
Yeah, I'll try to. And it's a piggyback on what you were trying to explain, Glenn. The rate of withdrawal of groundwater for the service authority customers will be the same after this project is completed as it is now. So there's no intent to withdraw any more water from the ground. Our number of customers has been relatively stable for many years on Bull Run Mountain. So our demand is pretty stable. So I think the premise of the question is that we're going to, for some reason, withdraw much more water than we have been for the last 20 years. And that's not the intent, and that's not what's going to happen. We are drilling this well to have some reserve capacity, and as Glenn explained, to be able to have a spare well in case of an emergency, or to rotate a well into service if we need to do some maintenance. So as Glenn described, steps have been taken in the investigation phase to ensure there's no negative impacts on wells that we monitored, several that were many hundred feet away. And we'll be withdrawing the same amount of water after this project as we're drawing today, and have been the same amounts largely that we have been for the last 20 years or 30 years. So I don't know if that helps the concern. But certainly, if someone feels like they are being impacted by service authority operations, we'll hand that over to our insurer to investigate fully.
We have two questions that I believe kind of piggyback of what you just said, Don. Can any of these wells or the reserve wells service as an active fire hydrant? And you mentioned the water will be connected to distribution piping. So where would that water be going?
You want me to hit that? I'll hit that. So when I speak of the distribution, the Bull Run Evergreen water system is a standalone water system. There are pipes on Bull Run Mountain that service our customers. That is a standalone water system. So that water does not leave the Bull Run Mountain and Evergreen. So I hope that clarifies that. And I think we may have some mapping on our website that depicts the service area for Bull Run. You want to speak to the fire hydrant question, Glenn?
Yeah, so this project is not intended to add any fire hydrants, like I mentioned during the presentation. One of the things that this project will not impact is the current layout, design, operation, or structure of our existing distribution system.
And you want to explain why we can't support a fire hydrant with the well system?
Yeah, it's just it's a simple matter of capacity, right, Don? There's some history here. But since I've been with the service authority, and that's now going on 5 years, we've not We've not had fire hydrants. We do serve, my understanding is that the fire department does have the ability to withdraw water from the tanks in the event there is a fire on the mountain. But we do not, and to my knowledge, have never had active hydrants on the mountain. Is there more to it than what I've said, Don? And if there is, please feel free.
No, I think you hit it. I think we do have an emergency hydrant at the water tanks, or at least one of the water tanks, but we just simply don't have the volume to supply firefighting operations. And we coordinate that closely with the fire department so that they provide fire protection via other means. And I see a follow-up question. Sorry, Michelle, if I'm jumping ahead, but there are maintenance hydrants in Evergreen, and those pre-existed the service authority taking over the system, but we work closely with the fire department so they know those are not available for firefighting purposes, but they can be used for some light flushing of the system, of the water system, they just don't provide the volume that a firefighting operation would need.
All right, I've got a couple more questions in my queue. The Bull Run Evergreen Water System did not historically disinfect their water. Now we are installing a disinfection equipment. Why is that happening?
Yeah, I can address that. Again, the reason is to ensure the reliability of the water that we're putting into the system, to ensure that it remains potable as it's distributed throughout the system. The water quality tests for the well itself came back and indicated that the water would need some minimal level of treatment in order to be a sustainable potable water source.
All right, we had a number of people asking questions about the equipment that was installed on Hunton Lane and Mountain Road. Apparently people are asking, what is that equipment for? And they kind of think it's a little unattractive looking. So I think they're just looking for some clarification on what that stuff is.
Sure, so that the infrastructure that's being talked about there is actually unrelated to the work that we're doing here, but I will talk a little bit about why that equipment is there. Right now, the way we operate the system, it's a little bit, I don't want to go into a lot of detail just because it would, I don't want to keep everybody here all night talking about, you know, this particular item, but there is occasionally a transfer of water from the upper levels on Bull Run Mountain down into the lower levels in Evergreen. And when we do that, we have equipment that reduces the pressure coming down off the mountain. If we didn't do that, anybody who had plumbing at the bottom of the mountain, it would probably just explode the pipes because it would just overpressurize. So we have some equipment and we had to relocate that equipment. What is in the VDOT right-of-way under that equipment is some pressure regulating and pressure reducing infrastructure to ensure that we can properly regulate the pressure coming from the mountain down into the Evergreen system. The above ground infrastructure that you see just allows us to monitor that equipment, and it sends information back to our monitoring station back at our headquarters in Woodbridge, so that if there are any problems, we are immediately notified and can respond to them.
All right, our next question. The amount of water needed by customers can change dramatically. We are concerned that Service Authority is laying the groundwork for the introduction of massive data center usage in the future.
So I'll take that, and then Don, if you want to add on, please feel free. I can tell you sincerely, there is no such plan. This project was actually conceived back in 2018, 2019, before there was any conversation about the data centers, at least that I'm aware of. But be that as it may, there is no hidden agenda here. There is no intent to increase or expand the service authority's service area, as I mentioned during the presentation. The service authority does not have any direct say in land use or how the county chooses to develop its comprehensive plan. Our role is to ensure that whatever plan the county comes up with, our water system and consequently our sewer system is in a state to be able to serve those areas in an appropriate manner. So the service authority is not, again, there's no hidden agenda here. We are doing everything that we feel like is appropriate and prudent to ensure that our current customers have access to potable water, and if they are also sewer customers, to a good sewer system, and to ensure that you know, we still use the motto, some may have heard, that, you know, growth pays for growth. And so we provide operation and maintenance of our existing system, and we will expand our system only as and if it's appropriate based on county designation. Don, did you want to correct anything I said or add on to it?
Just to clarify, on Bull Run Mountain and at Evergreen, we only operate a water system that we took over after the original operation on Bull Run Mountain was forced on us. And also, the data center question is an excellent question. The order of magnitude of water that a data center uses, where we have those in the center, what we call the central system, where that water is supplied, you know, in our core system, it's orders of magnitude greater than what our well system produces. So it's just, it's not feasible in any way that our well system on Bull Run, which is limited in capacity, could ever support a large commercial project. But your point's well made. Those land use decisions are county land use decisions, and certainly not in our plans.
We have a couple more questions regarding the private wells. In the event that for any reason our well systems have an impact on their water levels or something that causes damage within their wells itself, will we be taking any immediate action to remedy those problems?
So I think some other versions of that same question have been already asked and answered, don't you think, Michelle? This one
speaks more specifically on if they are without water for any reason, because near the wells or after we build the wells, would that be something that we would respond to if their water levels change?
Yeah, again, as I think Don mentioned earlier, if there were, we feel like that we've taken every precaution to ensure that the situations being described here will not happen. However, if it does, we would certainly follow up, discuss the problems, and engage our insurer to investigate the issue fully and take any action that's appropriate. But I just want to remind everyone, once again, the wells that we're putting in are not intended to expand or increase the amount of water that will be produced from the aquifer. It is only designed to provide additional redundancy in the event of things like emergencies. And to go back to the example we gave earlier, the amount of water that we provide the day before this project goes active will almost certainly be the amount of water that we withdraw the day after this project goes active. This well simply gives us one more option to operate in lieu of or in rotation with other wells that we already have on the mountain. Demand will dictate how much water we produce out of the aquifer, not the size or number or location of the wells.
And I think that one sort of piggybacks off the previous question, our next one. Is there any option to offer testing for well owners that if something happens, they have baseline data?
So for the wells themselves, no. For our, Don, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the Service Authority does offer a once per year test, at least for our customers, a once per year test for their water. Is that correct?
I don't know the particulars of that offer, Glenn. I'd have to look into that and get back. We can post that information.
Sure. But as far as doing testing on existing wells, on existing private wells, that is not something that we offer. I will say, however, that we do have a certified testing lab. So that if you are interested in having your water tested and you're on the Bull Run Mountain, you can either contact us through our website, the dispatch number. I think there's a number on our website for our lab testing facility, or you can just get in contact with us through the website or the email address that's on the screen.
And we've got a question that goes back to the earlier water tower question. Why not install a water tower as part of a sustainable long-term solution for the water issue? And this is somebody else's question, but I put them together. Why did we drop the water tower plan?
So I'm not aware of any additional water tower plan having been dropped. So I'm not certain of the genesis of that question. And what was the first part, Michelle?
Was why not install a water tower as part of a long-term plan for the water issue?
So we, including for this project, we do have a water model that we use on a regular basis to evaluate where and how much of our water gets distributed through what pipes and from what wells and so forth. Had the work leading up to this project indicated that a water tower were needed to provide that additional sustainability that you were talking about, or that the question infers, that would certainly have been part of this or some other project. To this point, our latest water models for the system on Bull Run and Evergreen doesn't suggest that we need an additional water tower to provide the level of service that we're talking about here.
I can maybe fill in more on that, Glenn. So I believe we currently have 5 wells that are operational in the Bull Run Mountain Evergreen system. And to give you an example of the type of emergency that we're concerned about, many years ago, we had a well casing, and many of these wells, or all these wells, were drilled prior to the Service Authority assuming control of the system. And some of you residents may recall the previous operation. So we have limited information on the wells. And in one case, a well pump in one of those wells failed. And so our crews went to retrieve the well, and in attempting to retrieve the well, the casing, you know, couple hundred feet down in the ground was damaged, and the well pump got lodged in the well casing. And so that situation, we were very concerned that that could last weeks as we tried to bring in equipment and retrieve the well. So when we considered redundancy options for Bull Run Mountain, we did talk about extra storage, an extra water tank, which could provide, as Glenn described with our water model, could provide maybe even several days of extra storage. But in the scenario that I just described, which we actually experienced, if that had lasted several weeks, even an extra storage tank would not have continued to provide enough water. It just, the tank would run dry. So we really felt like providing a spare well or spare wells was the right way to ensure that we had some redundancy or have some redundancy in that water system. So hopefully that gives you just an example of the type of scenario we're trying to make sure we're prepared for.
All right, I have another question. This project has been in the works since 2019. What has been the holdup?
Good question. There's no particular holdup that I can advise. We started this project with doing some tabletop analysis to try to minimize the upfront intrusion on people's property with, you know, equipment and the like. And then, you know, we've gone through the preliminary well location phase, drilling test wells, doing analysis on the test wells, going through an evaluation phase there to determine which of those wells were most suited to be turned into production wells. And of course, at each phase where we've needed to go out into the field, either to do drilling or to do testing, we've had to go through a round of, as you would expect, a round of notification and getting permission from the individuals whose properties we need access to. And so all of that, all I can say to that is all of that takes time. And we wanted to make sure that we got the logistics right on this. And then over the last 8 or 9 months, the project has been in design, and the county's requirements for a public facility review can be fairly exhaustive. And so we have been preparing for that. So that's probably a long-winded way of saying this project has never been at a standstill. Whether it's been design or data gathering or engineering and analysis or permitting, working with the health department or working with the county, all of these are just activities that sort of happen behind the scenes on projects like this that just take time. I don't know how better to answer that question.
All right, we have another one regarding the new well locations. Will the landowners of the new well locations be compensated in any way?
So as part of the, I'll answer that question this way, as part of the public facility review process, we have dealt directly with the landowners on which our two production wells reside and are part of the PFR. They have agreed with the county to allow the public facility review to move forward. And our negotiation for easement for our infrastructure on their property is an ongoing process, as you can imagine.
Maybe I'll ask, there's clearly a lot of concern, understandably, about private wells. And I wonder, Peter, if you could maybe comment on the, so you conducted 3 days of pumping and you provided a fair amount of monitoring before and after that pumping. Can you speak to the likelihood that operating this new well would have impacts beyond what you monitored, and maybe you could comment on that mitigation?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Don. It's exactly right. So the Service Authority has gone to a lot of effort to monitor wells that are both, their own production wells. They don't want to adversely impair their own existing production wells, but also private domestic wells. And that monitoring is done by installing a temporary pressure transducer, which is what's called a water level recorder. It's a device that hangs down inside a well and records where the water level is in your well at a set period. So if you're doing your laundry, your water level goes up and down, or take a shower, what have you. Or if in the case of running a pumping test, we were to pump a well and it affects your well, we would see what that impact would be, whether it be a few tenths of a foot or many feet or whatever it might be. But in this case, as Glenn outlined earlier, all the monitoring that's been done, there was only one well impacted during this pumping test. And that was the well that's located, the cart well that produces the water for the cart washing at the golf course facility. So in totality, based upon all the monitoring to date, there's no evidence of potential offsite impacts by pumping these wells. Now, the other mitigating factor is that the pumping test that was conducted was designed to be a maximum stress test, meaning we pumped the wells consecutively for 72 hours. The recommended operation plan and the actual long-term operating use of these wells is at a far less time scale. I think we've recommended 12 to 16 hours a day at the most. And the likelihood is, I'm guessing you guys actually use them far less than that. And when they're tied to your system for redundancy, the actual usage of any well goes down even further because you're rotating through these in your whole system. So the actual withdrawals that occur under operation will be significantly less than what we actually pumped during the pumping tests. So it would be harder. The point of mentioning this is that it would be much more difficult to get an impact during your usage than during our pumping tests. So if it hasn't happened to date, it would be exceedingly unlikely to happen during your regular operation. And I hope that helps answer that a little bit.
Thank you.
Sure.
I noticed a few people saying that they did not feel that they were properly notified either about meetings or about the testing. What are some of the ways that we do notify the communities? I think that would be helpful to let people know where they could find that information.
Sure. So again, we have a project website that you can go to. It's fairly easy to find. We do our absolute level best to try to contact individuals either by door knocking if it's a day of activities, or if it's a planned activity, we will send out mailed letters to, we'll try to figure out if we can, because they're not always the same, the account owner. That is the person who owns the property, who owns and pays for the in this case, the water account, and the person who actually lives at that location physically. If they happen to be renting or leasing or whatever, they may not necessarily be paying the water bill. And if we happen to have, and I'll just put a plug in for use of our website, if you happen to be one of our customers and have a similar concern, you can register your contact information on our using our system, phone number, email address, and that sort of thing. So we will use whatever public resources are at our disposal to try to figure out who to contact and how best to contact. And for this project, we've used sort of an all of the above strategy. We've sent out mailers, we've done public meetings, we've put information on our website, or some individuals that have contacted us at the email address that you see on the screen, we've responded to them directly by email at whatever their particular email address is. We've used just about every means that is reasonably within our power to try to contact people who might be affected by this project.
All right, and I had something just pop up in the chat box. Somebody missed the well locations. Glenn, could you go back to the slide that shows where the wells will be located?
Right, so here is the map that I've presented a little earlier. The locations of the wells that that we drilled to production are located where these sort of green or yellow large stars are. One is on some private property located just north of the intersection of Mountain Road and Hunt Lane. That well will be closed and capped unless and until future water is needed. The well that will actually be converted to production and connected, activated and connected to our distribution system is on the Evergreen Country Club property, very near the washdown area for the golf carts. The rest of these little dots here are just areas where we did monitoring during the pumping tests that were mentioned earlier. Pardon me.
I think that's just about it for the questions that I'm seeing. And we just had one more question come in. Who is the liaison for this project?
Liaison for this project is me. I'm the project manager for the service authority. So if you have any questions for me, the best way to get those questions or requests to me is to just use the email that's on the screen right now. Another way would be just to call our dispatch line, and they can, any questions that you have, they can forward to me. Or if it happens to be during business hours, they'll just probably transfer you either from customer service or dispatch directly to my line.
All right, we had another question about the impact on the private wells. If we did not test the individual's private wells, how can we say that the report is accurate, that there would be no impact?
We made no claims other than we monitored and tested the wells that we had access to at the time of the drawdown tests. We also, just to remind everyone again, once we knew where the production wells were, we used our GIS system to draw a 1,000-foot radius circle around these two production wells and tried to identify, based on the public records that we had, any private well owners, and send to them a letter indicating, describing the project and indicating that if they would be willing, the service authority would be prepared to set up monitoring during our well tests. So those efforts were undertaken, but only inside that 1,000-foot radius circle. And again, based on the ultimate results of the testing, drawdown testing that we came up with, that 1,000-foot radius circle seems to be fairly conservative. If you just looking at, you can see the box here where it says production well to be constructed. Those two wells, the production well and the well that's shown out here to the right, That's considerably more than 1,000 feet. So if you can imagine a circle drawn in here, right? This well was not impacted, nor was this well, nor was this well. And they're all, this well, I think, is probably right at 1,000 feet from the well that we're producing. So we made what efforts we felt like were prudent to try to contact individuals who we knew had private wells, to let them know that, let them know something about the project, and to inquire if they were interested in letting us monitor. Honestly, the couple of people that we heard back from on that letter were either silent on the subject of allowing us to do monitoring, or expressed concern about any monitoring activity that we would undertake would itself create some kind of contamination.
Okay, we have got two more questions about the proposed wells. So of the proposed test wells from the study, how many ended up being tested? And is either well an RPA?
Okay, read the first part again, Michelle.
Sorry. of the proposed test well locations from the initial study, how many ended up being tested?
Just for purposes of scale and being able to present this in this format, correct me if I'm wrong, Peter, but I think we're showing on here, not counting the two production wells, which themselves started as test wells, a couple of these other locations, other than the one on the, other than these three. So I think we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I think we had six, a total of seven, either six or seven test wells. And all of the test wells went through some degree of testing. Is that correct, Peter? I mean, we wouldn't have called them test wells otherwise, right?
Yeah, I think there's just a slight variation test in nomenclature here, Glenn. We drilled four test wells, two we converted into production wells. Some of those monitoring points are, there's a combination of monitoring points there. A couple of them are your existing production wells, golf course irrigation well, test wells. So it's a variety of monitoring. We would call those monitoring wells during a pumping test. So there are a variety of types of wells there displayed.
Right. And what was the second part of the question, Michelle?
The second part was, are either of the chosen wells in an RPA?
No, but that's a really good question. Let me show you. For the one on the golf course, you can see the identification of an existing wetland. For those on the call, an RPA is a resource protection area. It's a designation by the county as areas that have very special requirements or needs if you propose to do any activity in those areas. So we, as part of this project, we identified the RPA areas, and neither of these wells or any of the infrastructure around the wells has an impact on the RPA or any of the nearby RPAs.
All right. Did all four test wells come back with positive results, or only the two that have been selected?
I'm not sure what's meant by positive results, but there were no impacts. I think maybe this is what's being asked. There were no impacts to any of the test wells other than the well that was, that's a non-potable well on the golf course.
I think part of the question may be, Glenn, was there, why didn't we pursue those other two locations?
There were a number of reasons why we chose the two locations that we did, but we elected not to pursue some of the test well locations for conversion to full production, either because when we tested them, they did not produce or result in the safe yields that that we felt like were necessary, or there was some other mitigating circumstance, like we identified a bunch of private wells that were close enough to that production well that it would cause or potentially cause some of the problems that have been questioned or, you know, asked about here tonight. So we just tried our level best to keep our distance, if you will, from other private wells. I hope that answers, I think that question came from Ms. Pearsall. I hope that answers your question.
Okay, that is, I think we've covered everything that hasn't already been asked before. If nobody else has any other questions, then I will pass it back to you, Glenn.
Okay, I mentioned earlier that one of our participants was Mr. Colangelo. Mr. Colangelo, I would call on you to offer any final words that you have on this project.
Mr. Some audio. You may be having some audio challenges.
Okay. Let's give him another second. Mr. Colangelo covered this a little earlier, but there's a...
Can you hear me now?
Sure can. Go ahead.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Don. First, as the Gainesville District representative of the Service Authority Board of Directors, I want to thank you for attending tonight's meeting about the important public infrastructure project, your questions and comments. The Service Authority is responsible for providing reliable drinking water to our customers on Bull Run Mountain and in Evergreen Estates, something that we take very seriously. This project will provide a new well in the area that will continue to serve existing customers and ensure we have the backup capacity in case of an emergency, as we discussed this evening. This project impacts your community, so we appreciate your interest and attendance. Please continue to visit the project website or contact the staff if you have any further questions as this project continues. Glenn, thank you. Don, thank you. And the Service Authority staff, thank you for your time tonight, and citizens as well.
All right, thank you.
Oh, it looks like we just actually had a late question come in. Do the two selected wells meet or exceed the project expectations?
They do. Going into the production well development, we had a target amount of redundant capacity that we wanted to be able to provide. And the well we are developing certainly does that. The well that's that we are producing, but will be closed and capped, although it's not a particularly large producing well, it is better positioned if in the future there are other customers or there are other demands up on Bull Run Mountain proper. That well could be used to provide water in a more strategic way up to customers on the mountain. But since that is not, you know, that is not a clear and present demand today, the prudent thing to do is to close and cap it until it is, assuming it ever does become that.
And then we have one last question about what will the Service Authority do to compensate private homeowners in terms of damage on the project?
So I think we've answered that question a couple of times tonight already. We feel like that we've taken all the prudent steps to ensure that homeowners are not damaged. The question was asked earlier about why is this project taking so long? Frankly, one of the reasons is because we've wanted to be extremely careful about how we proceed, making sure that we've done all the studies that are necessary to ensure that the kind of damage that's inferred by this question doesn't occur. However, there are means of remediation typically in a situation like this. And frankly, whether it's a well project or any other service type of service authority project, if there are damages incurred, we'll refer the case to our insurance provider who will do all of the necessary investigations and we would resolve it through those means. I hope that answers the question. Any other questions, Michelle?
Nope, that looks like that was the last one officially.
Okay. So very quickly, I really do want to thank everybody for taking the time to come to this virtual public meeting tonight. I say that a bit apologetically. The past public meetings that we've had on this project have been in person. And our hope, as I'm sure everybody on this call hopes, is that by the time this project comes to fruition, and assuming there are any other, there's a need for future public meetings, whether it's this project or any other on Bull Run or anywhere else, we'd love to be able to do these in person. But thank you everybody for your patience with us. We appreciate all the really good questions and feedback tonight. And again, I would just remind everyone, if you do have other questions, I've got it on the wrong slide here, but if you do have other questions, again, the email address is brmewater, that's all one word, brmewater@pwcsa.org. We'll be happy to do our best to answer any other questions you may have. And if there's other information about this project that you're interested in that may not be covered in detail on anything that we've posted, the records on this project are all a matter of public record. We will do our level best to try to get an answer for you. So thank you very much for coming tonight, and we wish everybody a happy evening. Thank you.